Hey, Martin Sharp, the Fit for Business, Fit for Life coach here, and I hope you're going to enjoy this next amazing episode of Road to Rediscovery by the amazing Aubrey Johnson. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on the Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Just a quick reminder that you can hear this show anywhere you get your podcasts. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to leave a rate and review. Otherwise, feel free to give us feedback at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com, and we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. My special guest has a passion for helping others improve their well-being, building brands, and supporting women-led businesses. She's the founder of Retreat, a microdosing platform providing content, community, and coaching for psychedelic newcomers. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome Corey Sue Morris to the show. Hello, Corey. Welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
Hi, Aubrey. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, likewise. We're thrilled to have you. So, Corey, if you don't mind, I'd like for us to first cover your business and marketing expertise, right? And then we can pivot to psychedelics and microdosing and well-being, if that's okay.
That sounds great. I love talking about both of those things.
Wonderful. Thank you. And so from what I understand, you have 15 plus years building and scaling brands as a founder and head marketing for various companies. Early on, what would you say started your fire for that entrepreneurial spirit?
It's interesting. I didn't really know that I was an entrepreneur until later in life. So growing up, I always, you know, played by the rules. I was sort of that classic good girl. I wore bows in my hair and I got straight A's and I came home on time. And I, you know, I got into the right schools and I did the right things because that's what, you know, I thought was we were supposed to do. And, you know, I think in some ways, if you described me at 8 years old, some things would still be true today, right? I'm very cheerful and optimistic and I'm very eager to be helpful. And that's still true at eight, 18, 28. But as I grew older and I entered the working world, I started to realize that a lot of the systems and structures in place don't actually support or help us the way they were intended to do. Particularly, you know, if you're a woman or a person from a diverse background, like a minority in this country or a woman, like the systems are often like, whether they're healthcare or government. And in my career, I was in the structured organization. I worked for the government. I worked for nonprofits and all these organizations that were intended to help people and they continued to sort of fail in those, you know, regards of doing so. And so I was kind of a bull in a china shop after like 5-6 years in my career, and left a kind of prestigious government job because I was there to help change America's dependence on fossil fuels and go to clean energy. And we're still not off of that. So obviously it's a heavy charge. So I like took a hard turn and I quit my job and I joined a startup. And that's sort of where all this started, right? It was kind of driven by the fact that I like was going down the path that I was supposed to do. And it wasn't working for me and it wasn't working for what I set out to do in a number of organizations. And so found my way to startups and started building businesses kind of by accident. You know, And less meaningful, frankly. Like I went from clean energy to starting a media company about brunch, but it felt like I was actually, you know, doing something. So my first company was a media company all around helping women find brunch and party recommendations. It was an online magazine 10 years ago back when people were still reading blogs, before everybody was on TikTok. Right. And it was a wonderful creative outlet that I was able to scale and grow. And from there, I have always really been passionate about small business owners. I think they're the lifeblood of America. So I ran a marketing agency for a number of years that helped kind of small business owners from zero to one, you know, get their website live, get their first customers in the door, help them, you know, build and navigate the marketing world. And then did that for, you know, about 10, 12 years at startups and early stage businesses. I ran an agency helping women-led small businesses grow. So yeah, it's been a wild ride. Thanks for starting with the professional scope, because that's what I'm most comfortable with. And but yeah, I love helping people build their dreams.
Wow, that's fantastic. And you know, when it comes to such a major task like that, right? It's not like a light switch you can flip up and say, "Oh, it's done. I built this business." I mean, it's a grind from what I understand, you know, and it's a process, and helping people build businesses. And these are businesses of different areas, right? From media to other types of areas. It's not for the faint of heart, I don't think. Like you said, the bull in the china shop, you saw a higher purpose to yourself other than, you know, that goes beyond corporate America. There was a sense of fulfillment that you needed, that was meaningful to you, that was more important to you than corporate America, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think the back to that, just wanting to be helpful.
Yeah.
When you create the space to think about your higher purpose, now that I have, and I still am, right? My higher purpose is to help people to thrive, much like yours, right? And help them discover themselves and thrive. Initially, I think I was just driven by, I wanted to do stuff and I wanted to be helpful, right? And I feel like, you know, when you're younger, I was 25 at the time, right? I was like, well, I just want to be helpful and I don't feel like I'm doing enough, right? And so, and that's where it started, right? And now I've created the space to figure out what is my actual like mission and higher purpose. But at the time it was just like, this organization isn't doing enough to, and says they're going to be helpful and they're not doing enough to actually be helpful. And I'm just somebody that says, you know, means what I say, means what I do, you know, sorry. You know, and I'd like to do stuff and I wanted to be actually impactful. And I found that for me personally, right, the best place to do that was in these smaller shops. And you have, when you're helping somebody with their small business, that was something when you order from a small business, a real person does a happy dance, right? Like every time you order from a soda shop that isn't Coca-Cola, there's a real person there that is literally looking at the dollars and cents, and that might've helped their business go another day. And I think we don't realize that, like, we're such an advanced society in America and late stage capitalism, but like small businesses, the margins are still really, really tough. It's hard to get the word out. Every bit helps. So when you're working hands-on, whether it's a podcast or a restaurant or a competitor to Coca-Cola, use the analogy, are actually, you know, helping a real person there build their dreams.
Yeah, you truly are, you know, and I agree. Small town businesses or small businesses, they are the lifeblood, you know, of America. I mean, it's what helps keep small towns and small towns and individuals realizing their American dream, that American dream of owning your own business, right? And to me, that's just absolutely tremendous. You mentioned earlier how helping people and starting businesses up kind of happened accidentally. And during that time, as things were kind of happening accidentally, you know, this would happen, that would happen, but it's some good value stuff for helping others. Did you see your true purpose starting to take shape and take form? And the reason why I'm asking that, Corey, is because, you know, some people set out on a plan and that plan may look a certain way towards, you know, the goal of what they want to do or what they hope to be doing, you know, in the future. But the direction in which you get there may not look like what you originally intended. Yeah. So did you see your purpose starting to take shape as far as as far as the work that you would be doing in helping these businesses start up?
Yeah, I think for all three businesses, and we'll get to them, but specifically for my work running a marketing agency, helping with small businesses, I saw that need, and I saw what that looked like on the big picture. And I think that's that advice applies more broadly. It applies to my current business and to, you know, people looking to set out to do something more generally.
Yeah.
I think for me, I try to set the stage of what does the big picture look like, right? What does the end goal? There really is an end goal. We're all on a journey that hopefully keeps going, right? What does that vision look like? And what is the problem, right? The problem I was trying to solve is small businesses needed marketing support. And the vision was, you know, an accessible organization with a lot of helpful people that could help small businesses scale. And then the road, as you may know, is just a winding path. So I think for me, when I try to make decisions that are impactful, like quitting my job and starting a business or starting a new business or set up, it's the big vision and then being really, really flexible on the road to getting there, because it's going to evolve and curve and twist, or businesses use the term pivot. And I think the other thing that I try to be mindful of is not coming from a place of fear. So when I say, you know, reflecting back on that first business, I just sent a proposal to a company that needed support. And I did it because I was like, done is better than perfect. I'm just going to send this proposal and see what happens. And then I started a business, right? But I came from a place, it wasn't by accident. I had the big picture in mind, and it came from a place of bravery, right? Like, I can do this. I am enough. And I have the desire to be helpful, and I'm enough, and I can do that. And I'm just going to just do it. Right. And I think every time I don't do that, I'm dealing with some of that right now. It comes from a place of fear. I am not good enough. I am not enough. I'm not brave enough. Right. So I think when I would encourage more broadly, like, figure out what your superpower is, and then figure out how that aligns, your big vision can align with that. Know that the road's going to curve, and try to operate from a place of inner love and inner bravery, if at all possible, and knowing that that's much harder than it sounds.
Right. Yeah, it is a lot harder than it sounds, but I'm right there with you, Corey, in lockstep for sure, because I feel there's definitely a sweet spot. And what I mean by a sweet spot is, you know, to me, nervous energy is good. It can be healthy if it's embraced in the right way, I guess. But, you know, having that confidence, knowing that you are enough, knowing that you can do this, that is an absolute amazing level to start on when you're doing the work that you do, starting up businesses and so forth. And not everyone has that. And like you said, there are times when we have those doubts, you know, and we have this internal dialogue in our head saying that, you know, you're not enough. You can't do this. Who do you think you are? Why do you think you can do this? You know, I mean, you've heard of the term imposter syndrome. I mean, I've had that creep up on me many times, but at the same time, I have always been a believer of having the mindset and, you know, dressing is, that's a bad example, but some people want to dress or have the mindset for, you know, the position of where they want to be, okay, of where they want to go, you know, and you can have that and start doing the work of where you want to be or where you want to go, you know, and I think one helps the other. If you have that mindset, there may be some stumbles and doubts when you run into problems during that time, but you can overcome that by just persevering. Again, easier said than done, and kind of mitigating that imposter syndrome. It's a tough nut to crack sometimes.
It is. One thing I've been thinking about with imposter syndrome is coming from a place of service and reframing it from I to the other person, right? I saw something that was like, you know, if you're cut, if you're wounded, you don't ask if the doctor went to Harvard Medical School. You ask if they can stop the bleeding, right?
Right.
And there are, you know, now I'm in the mental health space and psychedelics, and there's a lot of people that need help, right? So coming for me, when I've been stuck a lot lately, actually, right, because it's a journey, and I've instead of, oh my gosh, I need to do this. Am I enough? Can I really do that? Instead, yeah. I flip to spending more time with my customers or with my team and come from a place of like, oh, I can help that person with that. They need that. Like, how can I serve them? And then it really, it unlocks the action almost immediately, right? Because when back to that being helpful, when there are jobs to be done and people that need support, you don't have the time to be fearful if you know that you can help. So that's been helping me unblock a little bit lately.
That's great. No, that's great to hear. And good, awesome insight too. So I appreciate you sharing that, Corey. Want to talk about brand and branding. Okay. When someone thinks of brand, or at least when I think of, early on, when I would think of brand, you know, I usually think about, or most people usually think about the tangible aspects, right? Mm-hmm. Like a logo or a slogan, or maybe even a spokesperson who's like the face of the brand, right?
Yeah.
Can you explain and share with us some insights on what are some of the intangibles that are important to establishing an effective brand? And the reason why I want to kind of couch it like that, Corey, is because I have a feeling that some of the intangibles that you are going to mention, okay, are also helpful for people from a personal aspect or personal perspective. But if I'm way off base, please let me know. I'm a big boy. But
no, not at all.
What are some of those intangibles?
I think the definition of a brand is subjective, right? So the way I define brand is how someone feels about your company or your personal brand, right? Mm-hmm. So that actually is, you know, you can measure it in a poll or, you know, but to me, it's not the logo, the website, the social media presence, the voice and tone. Those are all brand assets, marketing channels that cohesively pull together into how an individual feels and what they associate with your brand. Right. And that's the thing that's harder to put the pin on, right? Put your finger on. And so when I think about brand building, it's storytelling and values, right? People want a story that they can connect with, that they understand, and that can resonate with them, right? That's why some people, you know, that's why people get paid millions of dollars to work on brands, but also why some people love brands and hate them the other way, right? There's a narrative, and that's the lifeblood of a brand, just like your personal story is the lifeblood of your personal brand.
Right.
And I'm really seeing a trend in branding when you look at, you know, TikTok and Instagram, and it's less formal, right? I read something the other day, throw your brand book out the window, right? You switch up your colors on TikTok. Like, it doesn't need to be this perfect visual. You don't need to show up perfectly. People want authenticity these days. That's because we've been fed for the last 50, 100 years, these perfectly, you know, color coded, the logo needs to be an inch to the left on this channel.
That's right. We sure have.
And it's not about that. It's about, yes, your brand consistency across channels is huge, because if you have inconsistencies in your story and how people feel about it, that's a problem. And that's why brand agencies have been so consistent about like the logo placement across channels. But now it's really important to get out there and get in front of people, get on TikTok, get on Substack, and start telling your story and having a voice about things that are, you know, relevant to your business scope. I would caveat that, not an opinion on everything.
Yeah. No, I understand.
What do you think? How do you think about it?
Man, that's a great question. Not because I asked it. It's something that I truly, truly and genuinely want to know, you know, from different people, you know, what are the intangibles of a brand? And for me, being, I guess, an outsider looking in, because, you know, marketing's not my background. For me, the brand is a mindset. It's a mindset of a person, and it's the character of that person, and the character of that person As you mentioned, you know, with the voice and the logo and the slogans, you know, the attitude and the character of the person or the company must be that intangible that helps pull together the brand. In other words, you walk your walk when it comes to all other assets of the company or business or brand. You talk the talk in what your character reveals to the public, and it must be consistent. And to me, that is I'm sure there's other intangibles, but to me, that's the core intangible for, you know, being authentic and true and convincing and credible to, you know, to the community you want to build with your brand or consumers. I mean, whatever your endeavor is, right?
No, you're absolutely right. And that's the thing. You can't, people often try to build brands or early stage companies without going through their values, and they're actually, you know, establishing the business values and the code of ethics and what really matters to the founders and how you're going to hire based on your business values and how that looks in your offices or on your Zoom calls. And it doesn't work, right? There's a really great book by the founder of Red Antler. I'll look it up. But exactly that. There's a whole chapter on, you know, you can't really properly do a rebrand of your business until you have your values in line with what's going on in the company, right? It's a misalignment. It's sort of like, it's like lying. It's like a person is misaligned.
Yeah, it is.
It's like with their values, right?
Yes.
It's like, oh,
yes.
My value is authenticity. And you know, if my value is authenticity, I don't wear a lot of makeup, right? So if I show up in red lipstick, like that's not aligned with my personal brand, right?
Right.
So take a very like on the nose example.
No, I agree. 100%. 100%. Yeah. It has to be consistent, right? Yeah. No, that's awesome. Great conversation. So at this point, Corey, I'd like for us to kind of take that bridge over, right, to the microdosing side and everything. But in bringing your two loves together, what are some of the facets of business owners that you work with, right? What are some of the facets of their well-being that can be negatively impacted that psychedelics can help improve?
Oh gosh, business ownership is hard, right? I think being a human is hard these days. I think it's always been hard, but it feels, I wasn't around before, at least not in this life, but it certainly does feel like it's much harder these days than it has been for a while. I think there's a lot more placed on everyone. I am not yet a parent, but it seems like it's impossible to be a parent these days. You have, you know, not enough support in communities, childcare support.
Right.
It's hard to be a small business owner. We just went through COVID. Like I can't imagine it, certainly in the last 50 years, being more difficult for people like in business, for people generally, and also business owners and parents specifically. Small business owners, there's a lot of constraints, right? And more pressure put on us every single day. Psychedelic medicine can't necessarily solve the like pragmatic, you know, you've got to pay X in taxes and rent is this much, but it's unbelievable how psychedelic medicine can shift your perspective in terms of how you feel about yourself, how you feel about nature, how you feel about community. Can drastically reshift your priorities in ways that you may or may not likely have not anticipated, and helps a lot with mental health, right? So psychedelic medicine, specifically mushrooms, have been scientifically proven to help alleviate depression, postpartum depression, PTSD, alcohol use disorder, a number of things. And as a business owner myself, right, the practice of using psychedelic medicine in a structured setting at a micro and macro level for mental health has been transformative, and helps me show up for myself better and also for my husband better, my family and my team. So, we could talk about this later, but the school of like leadership using psychedelics as a tool to become a better leader is also a fascinating space that I'm just getting into, but I see those, benefits in my daily life.
Nice. Oh, that's very nice. And thank you for sharing like your personal impact, right? With it. I mean, not just the impacts of other business owners. I mean, because like you said, it's tough being a human, for anyone, whether you own a business or not. Okay. Yeah. I just feel that there are some unique pressures and unique demands that business owners have versus non-business owners that can kind of keep them awake at night. Anything can keep us awake at night, but from a business running standpoint, you have a lot that's counting on you. And so, that means you need to take care of you, not just for yourself, but for those people and things, entities, I guess, that count on you as well. So, and that's why I wanted to kind of ask, what are some of those things? So mental health is definitely key. PTSD, rerouting an addiction such as alcohol, to your point. That's one thing that I would love, if you don't mind, for us to kind of open up a little bit and talk about, someone who is dealing with alcohol addiction or alcoholism, how psychedelics can kind of help them navigate away from that, if that makes sense. That, at least that's what I gathered from what you were explaining. Is that?
Yeah. So I think, and also to the business piece. So I think at a very high level, macro level, and I'm not a scientist. My chemistry was not my strongest subject, but I'm very passionate about psychedelic medicine. I read a lot. And so, and I, this is the space. So at a high level, what psychedelics are specific, mind altering substances, many of which are natural plant-based. LSD is not natural. It's a chemical, but it is in the psychedelic category. Mushrooms, peyote, ayahuasca. These are plant medicines that have been used for thousands and thousands of years in most cultures that are not Western cultures, right? They've been used in Scotland and in Viking culture. They've been used across Latin America, right? Ayahuasca is the Chibibo tribe in the Amazon. And then, mushrooms are in, they've been used by curanderas in Mexico and Mesoamerica for thousands of years. And they have been primarily used for healing. It's only that they were new in the West, in the new sense in Western culture in the United States, as of the 1950s. So, but at a very high level, what psychedelics often do is they have the ability to sort of create a drastic change and alter. Going through a macro journey can really bring up a lot of, help people work through trauma. It can be a really like pivotal time. They can actually change your personality and change your perspective in a drastic way, which is why it's so very important to have mental health support on the front end and on the back end. And then on a micro level, so what my business does is we help people learn to microdose mushrooms safely. And it's an education tool, because you can have similar benefits in a much more sort of subtle way with microdosing. Microdosing is subperceptual, means you don't feel it. Macro journey, you're hallucinating. Microdosing, you're not seeing everything. And so they shift your energy and your perspectives in ways that allow you to shift things like limiting beliefs, shift things like addictions, shift things perspective, work through trauma more quickly, right? When you think about things like PTSD, you can go to talk therapy for years and years and years, but someone said once, I saw a meme that was very funny. It was like taking psychedelics is like swallowing a therapist. you work through it a lot more quickly, right? Back to you'll need the support. So I think what's really interesting for things like alcoholism and smoking cessation is there are studies that prove that that's shown that one or two doses of psilocybin mushrooms at a macro journey reduced drastic drinking by, I think, like 70% in study participants. And that, to me, the way I internalize that is that you can use psychedelics to shift something. So alcohol use, I noticed myself as an anxious person, I used to love a glass of wine more nights a week than I like to admit. And I personally, through my microdosing regimen and my structured healing sessions, have cut my drinking probably from like I live in New York City. I'd have a glass of wine like 5 nights a week. And now it's maybe one or two. And I just don't have the desire the way I used to, which is weird. Yeah. I used to like write on the calendar, like, you won't drink Monday through Wednesday. And now I just don't do it. And it feels natural. So I see that benefit in my own life. And then on the, you know, back to business owners, right? Psychedelics also help you, they unlock more creative thinking, like what is called divergent thinking versus convergent or like linear thinking. So as a business owner, right, like you may use psychedelic medicine to creative problem solve. For me, I see it like I looked at a box and I thought I could throw it away and then I used it for something else, like a creative art project for something in my house that I that also served the business, right? Like that's a very like literal example, but normally Corey not microdosing would never have looked at that box twice. Just throwing the box away. Corey microdosing, that box became a work of art and as something that is still there that has utility. And that is, you know, it shifts your perspective. I also regularly find myself asking different questions that lead me to different solutions and outcomes with my team for creative problem solving that's added immense value to the business and helped me work through things faster. So, and then you think about like shifting limiting beliefs for business owners that are maybe going out to open up a new location, apply for a loan, raise capital, right? Like if you're coming from a scarcity mindset, which we all do, like I'm too scared, I'm not good enough, et cetera. If you create a proper structure, whether macro, micro, and have like say an executive coach, I work with my executive coach or, you know, a therapist, you can really shift your perspective about yourself in ways that is much harder to do, without that medicine, at least for me and then a lot of other people. So, and then the last piece is the grounded and the connection thing. I think we run around as business owners being like, I got to do this thing and I don't have enough support. And it's that frustration plant medicine can really help take you back to a connection piece and a gratitude piece and that self-care that really helps heal from the inside and helps you show up every day for yourself better as well as your team. So those are just a few that I'm personally really excited about for business owners.
Well, that's a great few, and it's inspiring. I mean, what you mentioned, some of the examples you've given, Corey, are truly ways that leaders can become better leaders. Owners can become better owners. Business owner level decision making that they may struggle with, or at least think they've reached an impasse, you know, how this can help them navigate through that. That's tremendous. It really is. And you totally cleared up something that I was wondering about, and I'm sure the listeners were wondering about as well. You know, having professional guidance on both ends of microdosing is imperative, very important, it sounds like. That's what I'm gathering. And it seems as if I was always wondering, well, how can you target? Okay, how do you target the microdosing for the key element or the key thing that's bothering this individual versus that individual? This person may have PTSD. This person may have an alcohol addiction. This person may have depression. You broke down how those can be targeted and are targeted. And, you know, I mean, it's, to me, it's almost like you say, when you swallow something, it's like swallowing a therapist. And it's like when you swallow, let's say, a Tylenol, you know. Oh, I have a headache. I swallow a Tylenol. Oh, it helps my headache. Hey, I have a pain in my elbow. I swallow a Tylenol. Or whatever general medicine. And then it's like, okay, my elbow's feeling a little better. It's like, how does it target that area, you know? And so I want to thank you for sharing that insight on just, you know, how with guidance, with support, you know, it's not only just making sure that it's navigated through microdosing safely for clients, but also targeting the right areas in which they want to address.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Mushrooms actually we are so conditioned in Western medicine that like we take, you know, a Band-Aid here and a shot there. And
yeah.
There are all sorts of different types of mushrooms, much like cannabis. I think in a few years we'll find that there is, you know, a psilocybin pill for creativity and one for productivity, and that's the way it'll be like commercialized. But
Yeah.
mushrooms are natural, and they do help with different things, but it's often not what you expected. So that's why it is really important to have like a coach or a therapist, right? So for me, perfect example, like I wanting to improve my creativity and my productivity, and that actually happened, but I ended up being more working a lot on my marriage and being much more in touch with the emotional side, which is not something I really had planned on going into it, but it was just what happened. So mushrooms are natural and they work in different ways and they help in ways that you might not have expected. And everybody's different. So it's an interesting industry to be in because you're the science is broadly right. Increase your serotonin levels, make you more grounded, make you more connected, help you work through trauma. But that like shows up in people differently because every mushroom is different and every human is different. And we've all got different challenges that we're working through, but some things are universal, right? We all, we all need more connection these days, while most of us could use a little bit more grounding in this very tech enabled world. So yeah.
Fantastic. Oh, that's wonderful. So Corey, how can the listeners follow you and learn more about your great work and, you know, just learn more about microdosing and the benefits of psychedelics?
Yeah. So my mission is to help psychedelic newcomers learn to microdose safely. We provide a private online community content that's really helpful, educational content, and then concierge coaching and telehealth services, and it's retreatmicrodose.com, retreatmicrodose on Instagram, retreat mushrooms on TikTok. And, you know, we're here to answer your questions and provide help and support in any way, access to sort of these transformative medicines. So thanks for asking.
No, absolutely. We're going to make sure and have links to those social media handles, as well as links to the website. Retreatmicrodosing.com. Is that right, Corey?
Retreat Microdose.
Retreatmicrodose.com. Yep. Fantastic. Yeah, we'll have the correct URL and link to the website, social mediums, all that good stuff. So the listeners can click and learn more about your great work while listening to this awesome conversation. Corey Sue Morris, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really, really appreciate your insights and having you here sharing them with us.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. And hey, look, if you have a loved one, a colleague, coworker, close friend, neighbor, who just doesn't seem to be themselves, maybe going through some dark days of despair, not quite sure where to turn or who to turn to, I humbly ask that you please share this show with them, because on the road to rediscovery, we want our listeners to know two things. One, you're not alone. And two, there's always hope. The road to rediscovery, it's a movement, a revolution. And guess what? You are now part of it. We're all roadies on this journey of life. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Road to Rediscovery. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.